Wednesday, March 29th, 2023. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. I hope you, your family, your friends, you are all staying strong. You are all staying healthy right now. And yes, we are back from a short break. Yes, I know every year, come March Madness, it seems that I am taking some sort of a break. But you know, spring break beckoned. And so we packed up, we went out to Southern California and took a short break. We spent some time with some very close family. We ate some excellent food. We drank some delicious wine. And if I'm being honest, I watched an embarrassing amount of March Madness, like every single minute of pretty much every single game. Hey, I told you the NCAA tournament was wide open this year. I told you there were a number of good teams, but no great teams. And wow, what have we seen? For just the fourth time in NCAA history, we will not have a single number one seed in the Final Four. And for the very first time in NCAA history, we didn't even have a number one seed make it to the Elite Eight. And while it is always fun to have those big dog teams, you think back to years past, the UCLAs, the UNLVs, the Dukes, the North Carolinas, that are the big, heavy favorites. And we're all sitting there saying, hey, can anyone beat that big dog this year? Those seasons are really fun. But are you going to tell me that this tournament hasn't been entertaining? We have seen upsets and surprises and amazing player performances and some really good coaching. And yeah, probably some really bad coaching or maybe some players not listening to their coaches or whatever. But it has also been a very fun tournament, and it has been edge of your seat excitement in pretty much every game because you don't know how it's going to go. Also, at least according to ESPN, it seems the women's tournament has also been going, and it sounds like it has been very, very entertaining as well. Now, if I'm being completely transparent, if I'm being completely honest, I haven't watched a single second of the women's tournament. I haven't. I've been watching the men's tournament so much that I just haven't had time. But do not judge me for that. Don't act like you're a better person than me because you have watched some of the women's games. Hey, I've seen some of the highlights, and I've seen the crowds of tens of people there. So don't act like I'm the only one not watching. Apparently, there's not that many people watching. Besides, remember this. I have coached both boys and girls basketball at the high school level. So I have coached women playing basketball. I have an appreciation for their game. Don't you look down your nose at me just because I haven't been watching the women's tournament. I know what's going on there for the most part. No, I couldn't really tell you the teams that are there. I think there's some big favorites have been upset. Maybe South Carolina is the big dog. That's pretty good, right? And by the way, I know what missed layups look like, so I don't have to watch the whole thing. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com, where we have new articles going up every week. In fact, if you stop by this week, you might have saw some news that we broke concerning the NBA. Trying to figure some things out. We're going to be talking about that a little bit more later in the show. But we have links to the podcast there. We have links to the video there. And yes, we have links to the Daily Dose gear. You need a t-shirt, you need a hoodie, you need a sweatshirt. Go over to DailyDoseSports.com. You can find exactly what you need. Make sure you're stopping by there every single week. Also, before we do get started today, we do have our Daily Dose Bracket Challenge, which had like 50 bracket entries this year. And I wanted to give you an update on the current standings as they are right now. Remember, we do still have two Final Four games left. We do still have the final game left. But right now, this moment, SR Daily 25 is currently in first place with 630 points. I haven't confirmed it, but I believe that bracket belongs to the son of Daily Dose. So we'll keep an eye on that. He has Connecticut versus Alabama in his final game with Alabama winning it all. So he could still get some points from UConn if they make it to the final game. Talk about that a little bit more later. Michelle is in second place with 590 points. She has Kansas beating Alabama in the final, so she cannot earn any more points. An entry by the name of Pills Valium entered, I don't know, like 10 brackets, and they have Texas beating Purdue in their final, in the third place bracket. They have 570 points in that bracket. They have 560 points in their fourth place bracket, but they have Alabama beating Texas in that one, so they can't earn any more points. P-Dub is in fifth place with 530 points, but they have Houston beating Alabama, both of which are, of course, out. But we will be updating those final standings next week on the Dose, and we will let you know who will be winning our Daily Dose t-shirt. So be sure and listen and find out who will be our challenge winner. For the record, my bracket crashed and burned in brutal fashion this year. Worst I've ever done in the tournament. And yet, we'll see. We'll see how everything ends up. We'll see how it all settles in. Hey, today on the show, we are now down to the Final Four in the NCAA tournament, and we are going to be taking a brief look back at who the winners and losers of this tournament have been so far, and we will be making our Final Four predictions and our championship prediction as well on the Dose, and we will have a brand new Daily Dose Top 5 for you today. And by brand new, I mean not exactly brand new, but like kind of new. More like new and improved, I guess. More about that a little later. But first, let's jump into a little sports news. I know that we do talk about this on the Dose, at least a little bit, but we have to talk about it again. And I'm sorry, in advance. But there is currently a narrative that some of the major sports networks and like some of the talking hairdos have been pushing in the last few years that Americans do not like basketball. I mean, when you think about it, the NBA ratings are getting worse every year. Consider this. Back in 1998, the NBA Finals pulled 33 million viewers per game. Last season, in a reasonably compelling matchup between the Golden State Warriors and the Boston Celtics, the NBA got just 6.6 million viewers per game. Let's see. Let me think about this. I was told there would be math on the Dose, but that series last year went six games. So total, it's around 36 million viewers. The 98 finals averaged 33 million viewers per game. That's a major problem, people. But these recent numbers have been explained away for us by people saying things like, well, I mean, America is racist, so they don't want to watch the NBA. And Americans don't like basketball. And basketball's turning into more of an international sport, so people in America aren't watching as much. I mean, I guess maybe. Or, hear me out, the NBA is hot garbage with a ton of problems that they don't want to address, and that is why people aren't watching it. And here is a fact to help my point, because the opening rounds of the NCAA men's basketball tournament this year averaged a combined 9.3 million viewers per game, per window, across CBS, TBS, TNT, and True TV. Okay, well, that's only 3 million more per game than the NBA Finals. That's true. But remember that some of the games being played were in the middle of the work week, in the middle of the day. They were not in prime time. Now, perhaps, and again, I'm just spitballing here, instead of feeding us the line of racism and people hate basketball in America, maybe we should just admit that the NBA is their own worst problem. They have gotten political. Load management is ruining their game. The officiating is the worst in all of professional sports. You literally, right now, in the NBA, have big names like Luka Doncic and Devin Booker saying that refs are intentionally being shady right now. Devin Booker even went so far as to hint that maybe the refs are trying to help the LA Lakers make it to the postseason with some of their calls. Also, don't forget, Commissioner Adam Silver is the worst commissioner in pro sports. Hey, you can blame everyone else, or you can look in the mirror. Now, I already know what they're going to do. They're going to blame everyone else, but they had better look around at the landscape. Because people here in America, no, we're fine with basketball. Give us a good product. And for the record, also running against March Madness, we did have Japan's 3-2 win over the USA in the World Baseball Classic, and it drew a record average, really good for it, of 5.2 million viewers per game. Hey, that's pretty solid for a baseball classic. That's getting close to NBA Finals numbers. And again, those are basically exhibition games that were being played in this World Baseball Classic. Those aren't real games. They certainly aren't championship games. And that is what the NBA is struggling with. They had better take a long look at themselves. Like I said earlier in the show, you might want to go over to theodosports.com and take a look at an article and some of the things that the NBA might be looking at to improve their product. Moving over to college basketball. The college basketball coaching carousel is, of course, already turning and running and spinning, and people are jumping all over the place as usual. I'm not going to break down everyone, but I'll give you a few of the big names. Of course, longtime Syracuse head coach Jim Boeheim stepped down at the end of the year, or was made to step down at the end of the year, whatever. And so Boeheim's assistant and former Syracuse player Adrian Autry will be taking over in Syracuse. Iona coach Rick Pitino has agreed to take over at St. John's. I mean, remember, the Red Storm haven't even made the tournament since 2019, and they haven't advanced past the second round since like the late 90s. And yet, I would be willing to bet Rick Pitino will change that. Pitino is one of just three coaches to take five different schools to the NCAA tournament. He did it at Boston University, Providence, Kentucky, Louisville, and this year at Iona. And he's one of just two coaches in men's basketball history to lead three separate schools all the way to the Final Four. He did that at Providence, Kentucky, and Louisville. Hey, Rick Pitino might hire hookers for recruits. He might ruin your chicken cacciatore.
You are disgusting.
But he will win anywhere he goes. Another coaching move. I was rooting for this guy, but Patrick Ewing is out at Georgetown. He went just 75-109 at his alma mater. But the Hoyas just might be returning to their winning ways very soon, because somehow they managed to pull Providence coach Ed Cooley to take over for Ewing. And remember, Cooley was pretty good at Providence. He had them in a few NCAA tournaments. Kim English comes from George Mason. He will take over that Providence job now. I'll be honest, I'm kind of rooting for both St. John's and Georgetown to be good again, because I think college basketball is just better when those schools are winning. So that'll be fun to watch. Georgia Tech has dumped head coach Josh Pastner after seven pretty below average seasons. They are hiring former Pacific coach, you might recognize this name, Mighty Mouse Damon Stoudemire is taking over at Georgia Tech. Mike Bray stepped down at Notre Dame, so Penn State coach Mike Shrewsbury moves to South Bend after one very successful year at Penn State, but it was just one successful year in Happy Valley. The Nittany Lions have yet to name a head coach. We will see where they go. Former Texas Tech and Texas head coach Chris Beard will be taking over for Kermit Davis at Ole Miss. So, you know, women in Oxford had better start watching their mouths. Finally, McNeese State has not been to the NCAA tournament since 2002. So they went out this year and have made a deal with the devil and have hired former LSU head coach Will Wade. You might remember that LSU fired Will Wade after the program received a notice of allegations regarding all of his illicit expenditures with 11 Tigers players. The dismissal came after 3 years at LSU, where LSU suspended Wade following an FBI wiretap back in 2017, in which he said on a phone call to a former Tigers point guard, Javonte Smart, that he was going to be giving him some big-time money, which, of course, is not allowed. The NCAA hit LSU with a notice of allegations, which included five Level 1 violations and one Level 2 violation. Wade would leave, but I mean, hey, Wade has won everywhere he went. He won at Virginia Commonwealth. He did take LSU to a regular season championship in 2019. But there is also no question that Will Wade is a little bit slippery, and he will do anything to get some recruits in there. I would encourage, if you are a filmmaker right now, just start following McNeese State right now. Because this is about to be like Western University from Blue Chips in real life.
Every time we get ready to play, I just want to throw up.
Will Wade is going to go out and he is going to have some filthy recruiting going on. They're going to win some games. And then later, it's all going to come out. Oh, by the way, Will was he was getting himself in a little more trouble, paying recruits, paying their families, paying whoever, hiring whoever he could get. Oh, it's coming. Because that is just how Will Wade operates. Finally, the honeymoon is over between Kyrie Irving and Dallas Mavericks fans. How long did that honeymoon last? Like a week? You know, Irving was supposed to be the help that guard Luka Doncic desperately needs down in Dallas. But since trading for Kyrie back in early February, the Mavericks aren't doing well at all. They've lost far more games than they've won. And Luka and Irving as a duo, they just haven't played well together. They've been really, really bad. But last Friday, the wheels came completely off. In the second game of a back-to-back, the Dallas Mavericks were pummeled by the Charlotte Hornets, one of the worst teams in the NBA. And the hometown fans were not happy. American Airlines Center was filled with boos, and it was clear that fans in Dallas are not pleased with Kyrie. However, remember, this is Kyrie. And he wasn't pleased with them either. Here's what Mr. Irving had to say after the game. You obviously want to play well, but it's only five people on the court that can play for the Dallas Mavericks. If the fans want to change places, then hey, be my guest. Got years of work ahead to be great enough to be on this level. Look, I told you from the beginning, this experiment was probably going to be an exercise in futility. That part isn't surprising to me. The surprising part is Kyrie telling fans that they should trade places with him. Does he have any idea how many people would love to do exactly that? Think about it. Trade with Kyrie Irving. Let's see. Make millions of dollars. Act like a complete basket case. Play when you feel like it. Play selfishly when you feel like it. While acting like all of your team's struggles are somebody else's fault. Yeah. Would anyone not like to trade places with Kyrie Irving? And here's the worst part. Most everyone in the stands and games, especially, you know, most males, they honestly think they could trade places with Kyrie and that they'd be just fine. They're like, oh, I just need an opportunity. And if I got that opportunity, I could show them what I could do. No, I didn't actually play high school ball, but that was all politics. That was all the coach just didn't like me. Hey, you give me a chance in the NBA, I will show everyone my moves. This is, by the way, of why I'm totally in favor of eliminating all All-Star games. NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Get rid of them and instead make a pros versus Joes game. And yes, you're going to have the Joes sign off on an agreement that if they die, too bad. But that would be way more entertaining, wouldn't it? Hey, I'm just saying, Kyrie probably shouldn't offer to trade places with those nuts in the stands. Especially in Dallas, my goodness, the most delusional fans on the planet. Hey, I would trade places with Kyrie in a heartbeat. No question about that. I'm not saying a play. I'm just saying I'd like to live in his world for a minute. And you know the first thing I'd do if I switch places with Kyrie Irving? No, it wouldn't be go out and try to, you know, try out my moves in a game or go out and try to knock down the game-winning shot. No, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to be chasing around Instagram models or any of that. The first thing I'd do, I would book a trip to go to the edge of our flat world and look over the side. I want to see what's down there. That, my friends, would be a wild, wild trip to remember. Okay, coming back. The 2023 NCAA tournament has been every bit as wild and unpredictable as we were all hoping it would be. When we come back, we are going to be taking a look at the biggest winners and losers of what has been a very fun March Madness so far, and we're going to be making our predictions for the Final Four. So like I said, it has been a wild, unpredictable NCAA tournament in 2023. We have had so many upsets, so many surprises. It really has been a fun tournament from the beginning. But right now, who are the actual winners and the actual losers from a wildly entertaining NCAA men's tournament. We have more than a few of each of those. Let's go ahead and jump in. I will give our first winner today to the number 3 and the number 5 seeds in this tournament. Now, I suppose we can argue about the job that the NCAA selection committee does every year. It sure seems like they get a lot of things wrong every year. But I mean, hindsight on these things is always 20/20. We have the benefit of seeing how things ended up. They don't see that when they're making these brackets up. But I mean, think about this. In the Sweet 16, we had 3 number 3 seeds. That's pretty impressive. I'll also give a winner to number 5 seeds. Number 5 Miami, yeah, they're in the Final 4. Number 5 San Diego State is in the Final 4. Compare that, the 3s and the 5s, to just 2 number 1 seeds, 2 number 2 seeds, and 2 number 4 seeds even making the Sweet 16. Prior to this tournament, when it was all getting started, what was everyone talking about? They're talking about Alabama, maybe a little Purdue, maybe a little Houston, maybe Texas, the Big 12, Kansas. If you'd have told us that San Diego State, Miami, Xavier, Gonzaga, Kansas State, they would outperform those top seeds, yeah, we might have thought you were crazy. There's no way that's going to happen. And yet, that is exactly what happened. A few of those lower seeds proved to be much, much better. On the other side, of course, I have to give our first loser to number 1 seeds in the tournament this year who underperformed at a historic level. Like we mentioned earlier in the show, for the first time in the history of this tournament, a number 1 seed failed to even make the Elite 8. Purdue went out in historic fashion to a number 16 seed in the first round. More on that later. Alabama, I thought, just got out-scrapped by San Diego State. That was a bad matchup for them. They didn't play very well. That was in the Sweet 16. Houston folded like a tent against Miami. Another bad matchup. And Kansas collapsed in a game they were controlling against Arkansas. These number 1 seeds in 2023 produced nothing. They were terrible, and they are our first loser of the day today. Speaking of that Purdue upset, I have to give a big winner to Fairleigh Dickinson head coach Tobin Anderson. Anderson, if I'm being honest, he kind of looks a little bit like a leprechaun. And so he celebrated the day after St. Patrick's Day by becoming just the second number 16 seed in history to knock off a number 1 seed in the big dance. But not only did Tobin and Fairleigh Dickinson pull off that big upset, but Tobin Anderson was great on camera. They had him come in with some interviews because his win was so popular, and he was really good with the media. Dude is a solid coach. He put together a game plan to beat Purdue, and he was pretty entertaining in all of his interviews. Well done, Tobin Anderson. You deserve a winner. However, I have to give a loser to Fairleigh Dickinson themselves. Because no sooner did they knock off number 1 Purdue, and then they actually gave eventual Final Four team, Florida Atlantic, a pretty good game, but Tobin Anderson up and bailed on Fairleigh Dickinson for a better gig with Iona, which, as we mentioned before, Rick Pitino left for St. John's. So Tobin Anderson went and took his chance to go get a better job as soon as he possibly could. And I just feel bad for these mid-major and kind of lower schools like Fairleigh Dickinson. I mean, they hope in their wildest dreams, maybe we could win. Maybe, I don't know, we could win our tournament. Maybe we could go to an NCAA tournament. Wouldn't that be amazing? I mean, we don't do that here. At FDU, they go every few years, but it's not very often at all. But you just hope maybe we bring in a guy that could get us to the tournament, get us some national recognition, maybe put us on the map a little bit. But as soon as those guys do, and they win a few games, and they make a name, what do? They are gone the first chance they get. And then these mid-major and lower schools are left to start over again. Okay, well, guess we got to go find somebody else now. we had that little leprechaun guy, and he won, and he was pretty good in interviews. He's a pretty good coach. We won some games, and he's gone. First chance he got, he was gone. Yeah, I have to give a loser to Fairleigh Dickinson, unfortunately. Remember just a few years back when the one-and-dones were all the rage? All those one-and-done teams like Duke and Kentucky and North Carolina, they were racking up win after win after win behind the best freshmen in the country. They were going out and they were getting guys that they knew. You have to come to college for a year, so we're going to get you for 1 year, and in that year, we are going to make a run and try to win this whole thing. Hey, they had some success for a while. But this season, that wasn't the case. I have to give a winner to veteran teams this year. Teams like Creighton and Princeton and Tennessee, a little bit. Michigan State, a little bit. Xavier, Texas, Connecticut, Gonzaga. They won some games and they won it with some upperclassmen. But, I mean, think about this Final Four. San Diego State has highly productive seniors. Guys like Matt Bradley and Nathan Mensah, yeah, they're seniors. Miami had a perfect game this last Sunday from senior Jordan Miller. He went 7 of 7 from the field and 13 for 13 at the free throw line as Miami made a 13-point comeback to beat Texas on Sunday and make their first Final Four in school history. Again, by who? By upperclassmen. Florida Atlantic is actually one of the younger teams in the Final Four, but they get key contributions from seniors like Michael Forrest. And it's not that they are really, really young, but most of their best players are sophomores, but they're not freshmen. Florida Atlantic has a good young team, but they're not babies. They're not one-and-doners. And then you have a team like Connecticut, whose key players are, again, mostly all juniors and seniors. Experience has mattered in this tournament. No question about it. The one-and-dones, maybe they come back in vogue at some point, but right now, having some seniors, having some experience, having some leadership, it seems to matter. And that is why we saw some of these teams pull off some of these upsets that they did, because they had leadership and they had experienced players that knew how to do these things when they had to. I'm going to give a loser, and I'm going to give it to former Texas head coach Chris Beard, who you might remember actually led Texas to a 7-1 start this year, including wins against top 10 ranked Gonzaga and Creighton. However, on January 5th, at the beginning of the year, January 5th, Texas fired Chris Beard amidst assault allegations from his fiance, stating that Chris Beard had choked her, bit her, left bruises all over her leg, threw her around, and was just generally going nuts. That's what she said. She would eventually withdraw those charges and claims that they are still engaged. Beard finished his career at Texas with a 29-13 record. Meanwhile, Rodney Terry was named interim head coach at Texas, and he did a phenomenal job in what was a really tough situation. Not only do you have to get a new head coach, rethink some things you're doing, but in kind of an ugly situation with assault charges. But hey, Terry led the Longhorns to a 22-7 record. He took them all the way to the Elite Eight. Yeah, Texas waited about 30 seconds before they gave him that job permanently. And yet, here is the question that I have. On Sunday, after Texas was eliminated by Miami, was Chris Beard happy? Or was he sad? Because I know if we asked him, he would say, oh, I'm sad. I was really happy for the kids. I was rooting for my coaches. I know that's what he'd say. But I'm not sure I believe that. Because remember, this was his team. These were his recruits. That was his coaching staff. Does it take a little air out of the balloon if they do it without him? I think he'd have to. Either way, his fiance, she probably went to stay with her mom this past weekend, you know, just in case. I'm going to give a few conferences winners this year. The Big 12 was the big dog all year, and they did manage to go 9-7 in the tournament. Kansas State made it all the way to the Elite Eight. Not bad. Solid by the Big 12. The Big East has the best record in the tournament, going 10-4. They had Creighton, Xavier, Connecticut, and Marquette all winning multiple games each. So I have to give the Big East a winner. For the first time in conference history, the Mountain West managed to go 4-3 in the dance and is headed to the Final Four as San Diego State surprised everyone. Hey, that is huge. After that conference has struggled so much in the past few seasons, going winless, looking really bad, getting top seeds and doing nothing with them, San Diego State is going to the Final Four. Good for the Mountain West, but I am giving our biggest conference winner to Conference USA. Yeah, not only are they sending Florida Atlantic to the Final Four with that historic run, but you might remember that Florida Atlantic is leaving Conference USA for the AAC this summer. And the $10 to $13 million that they are getting the conference for their wins, yeah, it goes to Conference USA, not Florida Atlantic. They don't get to keep that. The teams in Conference USA that are staying in Conference USA, they get to divide that money up. Well done, CUSA. You got yourself a win for that, no doubt. You basically did nothing, but Florida Atlantic just went and won you a bunch of money. Nice job, Conference USA. On the other side, I have to give a loser to a couple of conferences as well. I know. Our Daily Dose punching bag, the Pac-12, was top-heavy all season, but we thought maybe UCLA or maybe Arizona, they could possibly be a title contender. Nope, not so much. The Pac-12 pooped their pants again. They went just 3-4, and no one from that conference even made it past the Sweet 16. But the Pac-12 is not our biggest loser this year. No, I have to give another loser to another conference. And that is to the Big Ten, who used to be the big dog every single year, but they struggled a lot this year. Maryland lost in the second round. Michigan State made a nice run, but they lost in the Sweet 16. Iowa lost in the first round. Indiana lost in the second round. So did Penn State. As a conference, the Big Ten went just 6-8 in this tournament. And here's what I have to wonder. Is this a trend? Because for the last few years, we have kind of seen it going this direction. The Big Ten gets a ton of teams in, but none of them are doing all that much. And that happened again this year. The Big Ten really, really underachieved. They didn't even win more games than they lost. I'm going to give a winner, and I'm going to give it to the insane athleticism and ability of these college basketball players. I mean, I'm watching these games. These guys are amazing. They can jump out of the gym. They can shoot threes. They fly around. They are playing at honestly what might be an all-time level physically. Have you seen some of these players? They are grown men. Not only are they 6'8 and run like a deer, they weigh 240 pounds and look like a linebacker. But I mean, think about it. Big men, they handle the basketball like guards. They shoot it like guards. Little guards are able to drive inside and finish around the basket. These players in college basketball, they are bigger, they are stronger, they are faster, I believe, than we've ever seen before. I am truly impressed by the things that college basketball players are doing right now. They are so, so physically good. And they get a winner for that. However, I have to give a loser at times, not always, but I have to give a loser at times to some very basic fundamentals of these same players. And I know what you're thinking. You're going, come on, Clint, quit being that old, get off my line guy. But, I mean, think about it. Some of these guys, they're such good dribblers, but they go nowhere with their dribble. They make silly mental errors. They throw the ball toward their own basket, like San Diego State did against Creighton. That almost cost them a game. You don't save a ball towards your own basket. It's an assist for the other team, and that's exactly what happened. San Diego State was lucky to survive that. They take the ball into a corner when teams are trapping. It's a full court press. Well, let's go to the corner. It's safe there. That's not where you want to go. Their shot selection sometimes is horrible. It's painful to watch. So many of them, you can tell, have grown up watching the NBA. They've watched guys like LeBron. They've watched players like Steph Curry, and they think that's what they're going to do. They're taking 24-foot fadeaways on the biggest, most important possession of the game. Fellas, that's bad basketball. Shot selection is sometimes terrible. They don't make their free throws very well. As good as they shoot, they don't make their free throws very well. I was actually surprised on Sunday in the Elite Eight game between Miami and Texas that Miami actually made free throws. I was like, oh, wow, this is new. Do you realize on the season this year, college basketball players are making free throws at a percentage of 69%? That's bad for a high school team, let alone a college team. I can't stand. I know the game has gone to a lot of screens on basketball, and I get it. If I was coaching, I'd do the same things because most teams don't understand how to beat those screens. They don't understand what to do against them. So I understand it, but they don't set very effective screens most of the time. The bigs go up to the top to set a screen for the point guard, get some screen and roll action going, get some motion going. They set it on air. I don't understand. I am also watching defenders at this level, and they allow penetration to the free throw line, to the elbow, anytime you want. You can get there. That breaks down everything. I know that late in that Creighton-San Diego State game, we saw a foul that might have cost Creighton the basketball game. And I didn't like the call. I'll be very, very honest. I wasn't a fan of the call. I didn't think it dictated the outcome. I didn't think there was that much of an advantage gained for Creighton. I thought it could be a no call easy enough. But whatever, they called it. I didn't like it. That's me. I want it left in the player's hands. And yet, when you go back and you watch the defense on that possession, watch how far out of position the defender is on that possession and tell me that he deserved anything but something bad to happen because he was totally out of position. He allowed the offensive player to go right to the free throw line and break down the defense. He committed a foul trying to catch up, and it cost him. Watching the fundamentals of these talented, insanely good players, it kind of hurts my feelings. It's a little bit tough to watch sometimes. I'm going to give a winner, and I've got to give it to the old man in the tournament, Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga, who at the age of 73 is making another amazing streak in this tournament. Hey, you might remember 17 years ago, Larrañaga led one of the most amazing and improbable runs in the history of March Madness when he took George Mason to the Final Four in 2006 when they were an 11 seed. Well, here he is doing it again, taking number 5 seeded Miami to the first Final Four in that school's history. Hey, Miami, watching them, they are long, they are lean, they are tough, they refuse to quit, and a lot of that comes from Jim Larrañaga, a truly underrated coach and a very, very nice, nice man, wishing him the best in the Final Four. But I have to give a loser, and I have to give it to a couple of coaches that every year just seem to struggle in this tournament. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a one-and-done format. I don't know what it is. Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes, he's about 500 in his history in the tournament. Iowa head coach Fran McCaffrey, he's now, I think, 6-11 in tournament games. Well, this year, Rick Barnes managed to win 2 games, but then Tennessee was upset by Florida Atlantic. Oh, and Fran McCaffrey, yeah, Iowa lost in the first round yet again. I don't know why, but Rick Barnes and Fran McCaffrey, they just struggle in this tournament. I'm going to give a winner, and I have to give this winner to college basketball fans all over because we have been treated to another incredible year where you absolutely could not predict what was going to happen from one game to the next. We have seen upsets. We have seen half-court shots. We have seen buzzer beaters. We have seen clutch performances. This tournament has been so much fun. If you're watching it, you're a winner because it's been great. But I do have to give a loser to most everyone's bracket. Do you realize it only took until day 2 in the tournament for there not to be a single perfect bracket out of the millions of entries on ESPN. Our Daily Dose bracket has crashed and burned like no other. My bracket went up in smoke. But I mean, even so, show me the bracket that did have Florida Atlantic, Connecticut, Miami, and San Diego State in their Final Four. I don't think that bracket exists. Every year, most everyone's bracket kind of crashes and burns. This year, it was worse than that. Everyone's bracket is an absolute dumpster fire this year. Our brackets are big losers this year. I'm going to give our final winner to some players that really showed well in this tournament, and they have made a name for themselves to go on to the next level. I mean, guys like Kyle Filipowski at Duke, Marcus Carr and Serge Ibari Rice at Texas, Adama Sanogo at Connecticut, Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson at Kansas State. These guys can flat out play. And I'm not sure they were all household names before this tournament, but they might be now. And they're probably going to get a chance to play at that next level because of how well they showed down the stretch and in this tournament. I will give my final loser today in this 2023 NCAA tournament. And I'm going to give it to one aspect of this tournament that I have really not enjoyed one single bit. And that has been the instant replay. It is way too slow. It chops up the game. Give me an instant replay ref that sits at the table and speeds this process up. Because the idea that when there's a questionable call, the refs have to walk over, turn to the TV, look in the viewer. We don't need all that. Speed this up. Have one ref designated to instant replay. He does it quick. Make it this. I don't want a delay every 2 minutes that lasts 10 minutes. It stops the flow of the game. It makes things feel choppy. This must be improved. It is extremely painful to watch the current instant replay process. Okay, let's jump into our Final Four preview right now. On Saturday in Houston, Texas, we are going to have those Final Four games tipping off. The first game will feature number 9 Florida Atlantic versus number 5 San Diego State. That game is set to begin at about 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And you know, this game of the two is widely considered to be the undercard of the two games, but I still think this game could be highly competitive. You know, Florida Atlantic, they just keep finding ways to win, and they're finding ways to win in this tournament as an underdog. But keep in mind, they have now won 35 games this season. And now the Owls find themselves just one game away from playing in a national championship. Sounds insane to say. FAU has trailed in the final 10 minutes of every single one of their tournament games. So that's something to think about. They have had to come back late. But when they've come back, they rely on that shooting, and they rely on their depth, and they've got a pretty good amount of depth to come back and find ways to win. You know, many people thought when the brackets were released that Florida Atlantic probably should have been seeded a little bit higher. I mean, they were 31-3 on the regular season. This team can shoot, they can score, and if big man Vlad Goldin, if he continues to defend the rim and be a force offensively inside, hey, Florida Atlantic is capable of beating anyone. What will stand in the way of the Owls is another mid-major. We talked about them a little bit before the tournament, and that is San Diego State. The Aztecs are the best defensive team still in the tournament. And so far, they have shut down every single offense that they have played. In this tournament, San Diego State is allowing 57 points per game. Hey, all they have to do is score 60 and they beat you. The Aztecs have rarely played from behind. They hold you down with their defense. They have players that can defend the rim as well. And then offensively, the Aztecs play physical. They try to go inside. They like to get to the free throw line and score tough baskets. And we know if you are attempting free throws, you have a good chance of winning that game because you're going inside, you're getting easy looks, and then you're getting shots at the line, you're getting the other team in foul trouble. So San Diego State likes to get the ball in. They like to play defense. They like to shorten the game a little bit. But my concern for San Diego State is if they get down by double digits to a team like Florida Atlantic, I think it could get away from them because I don't think they have the offense to keep up. And I will tell you one thing that concerned me a little bit about San Diego State. They had to battle so hard to beat Creighton in the Elite Eight on Sunday. And you could see after the game how much it took out of them physically, how much it took out of them emotionally. You could see a lot of the guys were in tears. I think Florida Atlantic is going to hold on in the first game here. I think they are going to win. I am picking the Owls to move on to the national championship. So let's move on to the main event of the Final Four, and that is the second game of the night. And this is the game that everyone is, or at least should be, really excited for, because at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time on Saturday night, we will get number 4 Connecticut versus number 5 Miami. And you know, looking at Connecticut in this tournament, they have absolutely been dominating every one of their opponents so far. Double-digit wins in every single game. They are beating people up. The Huskies were undefeated to start the season. They were 15-0 in non-conference games. Hey, that's pretty good. And one thing that UConn does really, really well, they rebound. They rebound defensively, and they go get stuff offensively as well. And if that's the case against Miami, Miami's going to get themselves in trouble because UConn is going to get those easy buckets inside, and they are going to keep Miami off of the offensive boards. We saw on Sunday against Texas, Miami was able to sneak in and get a few easy ones on offensive boards. So to me, it's a little bit difficult to find a weakness on this UConn team. They've got Adama Sanogo, who averages 20 points, 10 boards a game. The Huskies also are able to score some points, and they can score them in bunches. In the tournament, UConn has scored from in the paint, and they've scored from outside shooting. Jordan Hawkins is shooting 52% from three-point range. That's deadly. I think the thing that threw us off about Connecticut, or at least threw me off about Connecticut, was their midseason swoon that they had. Because they were winning all their non-conference games, and then they had a stretch in the Big East Conference where they lost 6 out of 8 games. But the Big East is a really good conference. So maybe, looking back, we all needed to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. Maybe UConn really was the best team all along. Their opponent, the Miami Hurricanes, is playing red hot on offense. They are scoring 80 points per game now in 3 straight games. Nigel Pack has led them, but I mean, Isaiah Wong, all that guy does is hit tough shots. And we saw the performance that Jordan Miller had on Sunday against Texas. He was perfect from the field. He was perfect at the line. This game, to me, is going to come down to whether Miami can break down UConn's defense and turn this into a track meet. And if Miami can score more than 80 points, yeah, that would be following the blueprint that we saw those Big East teams follow to beat UConn earlier in the year. Unfortunately, I don't know if Miami can do that. I have the same concerns about Miami that I have with San Diego State. They expended so much energy on Sunday to come back from 13 points down in that game to beat Texas. I think it's going to be really hard for them to have much left, let alone for them to have much left against what might be the best team in the field in reality. I am going to take UConn to roll. Okay, coming back, we're going to give you our championship preview. And then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. We have a brand spanking new Daily Dose Top 5 for you today, and it is March Madness flavored. Okay, well, it's not exactly brand new, but it is at least new and improved. So if my predictions are accurate, on Championship Monday night, we would have number 9 Florida Atlantic facing number 4 Connecticut. And can I just say one thing before we jump into this game? I have heard some of the sports media clowns talking about how this has been a really fun tournament, but now they don't even want to watch the Final Four or the title game because there's no big blue blood kind of programs in this. There are no favorites in this. So this is going to be an awful Final Four. Why bother watching it? I've even heard a few fans say that. Hey, the tournament's been fun. Don't get me wrong, but I don't want to watch this. these are a bunch of nobody programs. Can I just send a personal message to those talking hairdos that are saying that? To those front-running bandwagon losers, don't watch. By all means, don't watch. And also, don't talk about these games. Don't discuss them next week when there's nothing else to talk about. Don't discuss them, especially if we get tight, competitive, fun games. Keep college basketball out of your mouth. And you can talk about college football next year when the same teams keep winning every year. We get Alabama, we get Clemson, we get Georgia, we get Ohio State every single year. And the crazy thing is, these are the same people complaining about that. Well, in college football, we just have the same teams every year. Well, this year in college hoops, we get new blood and you still complain. So shut up, idiots. Now, back to Monday night. I would pick Florida Atlantic versus UConn for my championship game. And I think this game could actually be entertaining because I do think Florida Atlantic might actually be able to break that 80-point barrier and give UConn a good game. Florida Atlantic is young, but they're not babies. This is a team mostly made up of sophomores and juniors. They have proven all year they can play with anyone in the country. But in the end, I'm going to pick the UConn Huskies to win it all for two reasons. I think, one, they are just so tested coming from that Big East. And I think, two, they are just physically tougher. And in basketball, usually, not always, but usually, the more physical team usually wins if they're intelligent with their physicality. And it's not like UConn is just physical and they can't play. They're not. They're very, very talented, but I also think they're more physical. I believe that the Connecticut Huskies will be the national champions on Monday night. Then again, have any of the picks this year gone the way we thought they would? No, not at all. So I'm going to be watching each of these games, and I am going to be hoping for three more highly competitive, fun games. That is my wish for this Final Four. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Like we've been talking about all day, the 2023 NCAA men's basketball tournament has been wild. It has been unpredictable. But what is truly crazy is that this isn't just like a one-year thing. I say it all the time, but March Madness is the only major sporting event that always lives up to the hype. Some years are a little better than others, but every single year, the NCAA tournament features buzzer beaters and it features upsets. Well, back in 2017, here at the Daily Dose, we actually did a Daily Dose Top 5 counting down the top 5 March Madness upsets in history. Well, since then, we've actually had a number of changes to that list. So today, we are bringing you the new and improved Daily Dose Top 5 largest upsets in March Madness history. Now, I'll tell you this. Again, these games are not my opinion because this list is based on point spread. The wider the betting line, the bigger we are considering the upset. Like I said, we did this list back in 2017. However, we now have a brand new top five. So let's go ahead and jump in. We start off at number five. And we go back to the 1997 NCAA tournament, which ended up being a wild tournament as a whole. How crazy was it? The Arizona Wildcats actually lived up to their potential and won it all. I mean, that never happens. However, in the first round of the tournament, the South Carolina Gamecocks were ranked number 6 overall in the country. They had head coach Eddie Fogler and future NBA players BJ McKee and Ryan Stack. The Gamecocks were a number 2 seed and would be facing the number 15 Coppin State Eagles. This was one of those games that everyone just kind of ignored, and they moved the Gamecocks forward without even a second thought. Hey, the Gamecocks were an 18.5 favorite in this game. But Coppin State got 22 points from a bench player by the name of Danny Singletary. And they didn't just beat South Carolina. They dominated the second half, and they beat them by 13. This wasn't a last-second buzzer beater. Coppin State sent South Carolina home. And then they ended up taking number 10 Texas to the wire in the second round before they eventually lost by 1 point. Coppin State's 18.5 upset comes in today on our list. At number 5. We move next to number 4. And we go back to the year 1993, where the Dean Smith-led North Carolina Tar Heels would beat Michigan and the Fab Five in that infamous Chris Webber timeout championship game. And we have to bring up one of the great underachievers in the tournament most every season. We just talked about him, just like this season. Because the Arizona Wildcats were 24-4. They had head coach Lou Olsen, and they were loaded. They had Damon Stoudemire. They had Chris Mills. They had Khalid Reeves. They had Ed Stokes. They had Reggie Geary. They were number 5 in the country, and they were a number 2 seed, where they would face the number 15 Santa Clara Broncos. And while some March Madness fans might remember Santa Clara guard Steve Nash, it wasn't actually Nash who was the star of this game. He made some big plays, no question. But it was a tall, gangly, blonde kid named Pete Eisenrich that scored 20 points, despite Santa Clara being a 20-point Vegas underdog. The Broncos held on to send that talented Arizona squad home for the season, just like Arizona squads usually are sent home for the season. Arizona was favored by 20, but they couldn't get it done down the stretch, and that lands them on our list today at number 4. So we arrive at number 3, and we told you that this list is new and improved. And here's one big change to our list from that one back in 2017. Because it was back in 2018 that the Villanova Wildcats would beat Michigan in the title game. But it was actually the Virginia Cavaliers who were the number 1 overall seed in that tournament. The Cavs were 31-2, and head coach Tony Bennett, he had a ton of talent. He had DeAndre Hunter. He had Kyle Guy. He had Devin Hall. When they were seeded against number 16, University of Maryland, Baltimore County, a team that had 10 losses on the year, everyone yawned. They looked elsewhere to pick their upsets. Big mistake. Because Virginia was favored by 20.5 points. Well, we know Tony Bennett's teams, they're usually really good defensively, but sometimes they struggle to score. So they can be in close games, but they usually squeak them out. But this game, it wasn't even that close. The game was tied at halftime, but we figured, well, Virginia will make their run eventually, won't they? No, they won't. It was UMBC making their run. They won the second half and the game by 20, behind 28 points from Jarris Lyles, who was hitting threes and tossing up acrobatic shots in the lane. UMBC blew out number 1 Virginia by 20 and made history in the process, becoming the first number 16 seed to ever beat a number 1 seed. Of course, Virginia would bounce back the next year and win it all. But the University of Maryland Baltimore County Retrievers were a 20.5-point underdog, and they pulled off the upset. That puts them on our list today at number 3. So we reached the number 2 upset by betting point spread in the NCAA tournament, and we go back to 2012. John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats won the national title by beating Kansas in the championship game. But that same season, the Missouri Tigers, they had a pretty good squad. Sophomore guard Phil Pressey and new Providence head coach Kim English had the Tigers ranked number 3 in the country that year, and they just barely missed out on being a number 1 seed. But missing out on being a number 1 seed, that ended up being pretty crucial. Because while all the other number 1 seeds in this tournament cruised to the second round, Missouri matched up with Norfolk State, and that team was experienced. They were unafraid. But there was no way that Norfolk would have anything for Mizzou, was there? Vegas set the 30-5 Missouri Tigers as a 21.5-point favorite. But Norfolk could score points, and Missouri had one fatal flaw. They usually played small ball, and they weren't a great rebounding team. Norfolk shot 63% from the field. They held Kim English to just 2 points on the day. And with the game tied late, Norfolk kept coming up with offensive rebounds and scoring buckets and hitting free throws. Despite being a 21.5-point underdog, the Norfolk State Spartans beat Missouri 86-84 for the second biggest upset by point spread in tournament history. So we reach the number one biggest NCAA tournament upset by point spread. And we go back, well, to like a week ago when the number one seeded Purdue Boilermakers were a 23.5 point favorite over the number 16 seed Fairleigh Dickinson Knights. Hey, Purdue had 7'4" big man Zach Edey, and he's been dominant all year. He averaged 22 points and 13 rebounds for the season. This is going to be cake. Fairleigh Dickinson was the shortest average team in the tournament. So Edey would dominate, and Purdue would move on easily. Except that a lot of people forget one of the biggest principles of basketball in general, and March Madness specifically: you can have great big men, but guards win games in the tournament. Purdue shot just 5 of 26 from three-point range. And despite Edey still doing his thing, I mean, he scored 21, he grabbed 15 boards, the young Purdue guards, they just got outplayed all day. Fairleigh Dickinson used their speed. They used their quickness to their advantage, and they outlasted Purdue 63-58 to become the second number 16 seed to beat a number one. And they become the biggest underdog in tournament history by point spread. That point spread was 23.5 points. A brief side note of a few other games that just missed our list today. Last year's number 15 St. Peter's Peacocks upsetting number 2 Kentucky. That was an 18-point spread. Back in 2001, the number 15 Hampton Pirates upset number 2 Iowa State. That was a 17.5-point spread. And back in 1986, Little Rock was a 14 seed. They beat number 3 Notre Dame, also a 17.5-point spread. Also, one other game that just missed our list this year, number 15 Princeton beating number 2 Arizona. That was a 14.5-point spread. Hey, every single season, March Madness brews up some amazing upsets. And I feel like now, with the NIL money and the transfer portal, we're seeing these upsets more and more every single year. There's just more parity. And I am very much looking forward to how this incredible 2023 tournament is going to finish up. I mean, we look at the Final Four coming this weekend and the championship game, and we say, well, we know what's going to happen. We have a pretty good idea who's going to win this thing, right? But honestly, what in the world has gone according to the script so far? So again, we're just going to have to wait and find out. Because as March Madness proves every year, this is why you play the games. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are going to be recapping that Final Four and the national championship game. But then we're going to start turning some attention toward the NBA and NHL playoffs. Do you realize there's only about 2 weeks left in those regular seasons? The playoffs are coming quickly, so we might have to check in on how things are going over there. Plus, you know, we'll be bringing you our own unique takes on the world of sports news as only we can. So be sure you tune into The Dose next week, and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Plus, we'll also be announcing who won our Daily Dose March Madness bracket. Hey, I want to say thanks to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out what is going on over there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Every time we get ready to play, I just want to throw up.